Did you have a nice day of worky things today?
Nice is a word. How was your stuff going? You're working on post.
Today I was working on pre as well as post. I read some scripts. And then I was working on the first assembly of the commercial, and it's way too long, which makes me really happy because that means we have way more coverage than we needed. And now it's just a matter of whittling it down to something useful and 30 seconds long.
That's a good thing you have that sword you do those cuts with.
Yeah, I'm gonna cut them up in my Avid.
Yeah, you're gonna take those lengths of celluloid and slice every single one of them, and then
Yeah, I've got a modified moviola in my office here that I attached the katana to.
Yeah.
It's very unwieldy. It's like one of those paper cutters you used to use at like Kinko's to cut paper down, except it's a little bit longer and a lot sharper.
Okay.
You all right? You need to lay down? You need a nap or something?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine, Dan.
You sure about that? Are you depressed? Do you need a hug?
I don't really like human contact, so no. But I could use, yeah, probably a nap. Just one of those days. Just one of those super duper days. But it's okay, because we're going to talk about two movies, so I'm sure that it will not in any way affect what I say about them as we talk. Everything will be fine.
It can't be a sad day because the first of our t-shirts is in the wild, according to the internet.
Yes. Listener friend of the show, AF Waller, had a received his shirt before us. Presumably that's because he's closer to Kentucky than we are.
Oh, is that where the shirts come from?
Apparently, according to the DHL tracking stuff, which apparently has been going on since the 15th of January, and today is the 21st, not to ruin the magic of evergreen podcasting, but it's been a few days. And it's one of those magical things where DHL just kind of, takes its time, and it's called Smart Service, because they're doing that thing that UPS and other people do where they take it most of the way to a destination, and then they go, "Hey, United States Postal Service, you deliver it to their door."
That'll end
And
well.
so, yeah, so it's been traded off. It arrived in Compton last night at the DHL sorting facility, and then it was transferred from the sorting facility to a U.S. post office today. That's all it did today. It's a big day for it, long day. You don't want your packages to get worn out by moving too many times in a city.
Yeah.
So it's going to hang out there overnight. It got there about 2 p.m. So it's got to check in. Get the lay of the land. Get a good feel for the post office, and wait around until maybe sometime tomorrow, possibly. Who knows? Maybe Saturday afternoon. We'll see how we're feeling.
Yeah, I mean that first day in Los Angeles, you really just need to get settled in and maybe grab something to eat, but just sort of chill out and get used to it because it can be a little overwhelming if you're from out of town.
Yeah, jet lag, especially if you're coming from the East Coast.
Yeah, East Coast.
Although
Ridiculous.
I find that if you're traveling from the East Coast, you're actually a little bit more you're a little bit super duper tired, but if you're going from the West Coast to the East Coast, then you're better because you're like, "I'm awake." Except if you take red eyes, then you're like really tired because then you didn't get any sleep at all, because that's how red eyes work across the thing with the hours and the time and the flights.
I try not to do that, but
Yeah.
yeah, I don't travel back there very often.
Well, you don't go to Fancy Tampa, so.
Fancy stamp? No, I go to not fancy Ohio.
I've been catching up on podcasts that I had missed. I don't know if you're aware of this, but I had a bit of a backlog. You see, I really liked Reconcilable Differences, but they talked about Mad Max Fury Road, and so I was like, "Well, I haven't seen it yet, so I can't listen to any more podcasts." And so it sat there, and it sat there and sat there and sat there and sat there. And so then I finally saw Mad Max Fury Road the other week, and I've been working my way slowly back through. And now I'm finally all the way caught up until they talked about the game, which I also haven't seen. So, it's a minefield. It's a minefield of topics.
I haven't seen the game in probably 10 years, but yeah, I too have a backlog of non-essential things that don't really prevent me from continuing to listen. I just don't really have the time. I think I counted the other day. I think I have like 130 something unlistened podcasts.
That's a lot.
It's too many. It's too many podcasts.
Peak podcast.
Yeah.
Well,
one of these days I'll catch up.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's really rough when somebody's talking about a piece of popular entertainment that is artfully done and they want you to check it out and they want you to see it. And then you got to wait and then you can't see it or anything. It's a real bummer. There should be fewer podcasts where people talk about movies is my point.
Yeah, there's a
we should cancel with this thing that we're doing right now.
Sure. There was another one that came out today talking about Star Wars, and I started listening to it and I was like, you know, I can't. It's too close. I've already there's been too much Star Wars in my ears. I'll just save that in the podcast list there and 137 or something, and we'll get back to that when the Star Wars dies down a little bit, which will probably be in like 4 months.
Just check it out when it comes out on video.
Yeah, totally. Did you see they pushed the next one?
Yeah, I really don't care. Because it just doesn't surprise me.
It's doomed, man. It's doomed. They pushed it from March to December.
No, it's not doomed. It's the opposite of doomed. They saw how well everything went for them when they released in December, and so they're releasing in December. They're going.
We should throw some more digital characters in here that we can sell in the stores. That'll take a few more months. So
no, I don't think that's the reason, Dan.
No.
No. And it gives them a really good way to screw over Avatar, because that's the only other major thing that's going to be opening that December. And
Avatar is opening in December as well.
Who really wants to see Avatar 2? Raise your hand. I don't see any hands raised. So,
well, I hear he's making 2 and 3 and maybe 4 all at the same time. So that's something.
I think it is possible that Mr. Jim Cameron has gone a little Lucas-y. So
a little Lucas-y?
Yeah. Got a little bit of the Lucasitis.
Hmm. Well, he originally planned it as at least a trilogy, right? So he's got to fulfill his initial plans.
Yeah, well, if that first movie was anything to go on, that means we've got like, what, 12, 16 hours worth of forest to sit through and people plugging in umbilicals into things. So that's going to be exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be exciting once they invent whatever technology he needs to make those movies or something. I don't know.
I'm really not interested. After seeing Avatar, it was just, what a bummer. So speaking of tremendous letdowns.
Is that how you want to come into this?
No, I'm just mostly trolling the listeners. There are two very well-respected movies that have come out in the past year that have won a lot of awards already and are on the slate to win some more awards as we go into Oscar season.
Did you say well-respected? That was like the most backhanded well-respected I've ever heard.
No, I mean, I wasn't being sarcastic.
Okay.
A lot of people, no, seriously, a lot of people like it. Do you know people that are not a lot of people who don't like it?
Do I know people that aren't?
Yeah, exactly what I said.
Anyway, continue with your train of thought. Well respected, something. So, award ceremony.
Yeah, they're gonna, you know, they're up for more awards, including Oscars, because you know that's how Oscars work, for visual effects. And so I was like, well, we should probably talk about them since this is ostensibly a movie podcast of some sort. It's weird though, because then after I had seen them, I was just like, well, maybe we talk about one for a whole episode, or maybe we talk about the other one for a whole episode. And I was just like, I don't know if I have a whole bunch to say now after seeing these and hearing everybody else talk about them. Like, I feel like there's a lot of stuff that's already out there in the world, in the ether. So
no, I feel similarly. Yeah. We were a couple minutes late because I had to reread the Wikipedia articles for both Mad Max Fury Road and The Martian, because it's been a while since I saw both of them. I mean, Fury Road more recently because it's on HBO now. But I read the summaries, and it's one of those movies where I go, yep, nod my head and go, yeah, that's what happened. And then I close the tab and that's it. That's pretty much the summation of my feelings. I mean, they're well-made movies. They each do a couple things that are interesting. I don't know how unique The Martian is, but they're well-made movies. People enjoyed them. And then if they're anything like me, they promptly forgot about them.
Well, I would say I'm slightly more positive than you are about this. But
I didn't say anything negative. I enjoyed the movie and then I forgot that they existed.
You said you immediately forgot about them after seeing them. So that's not exactly... Yes. You know, Mr. Backhanded Compliment Criticizer over
there. Well, it's like you go to the fair and then you remember that you had a good time at the fair, but you don't remember exactly which rides you rode or something. It's just like, yeah, that was a good time.
You went on the Gravitron, of course. Come on, Dan.
Do they still have names like Gravitron and stuff?
I have no idea. I haven't been to a fair in forever. But you remember the Gravitron?
Is that the one that spins and then goes upside down?
Well, it spins. You are laying against the wall on these
isn't that a tilt-a-whirl?
No. It just spins really fast. And then as it spins, the like panel that you're on slides up and everybody's pressed out to the exterior of it by the centrifugal force.
Pretty sure that's called a tilt-a-whirl.
No, because it doesn't.
It tilts and it whirls.
But
what am I thinking of?
A tilt-a-whirl is a different ride. Just look up the Gravitron. It's not the same.
All right, fine.
Two totally different things. They have different names. But I have no interest in that. But I think I was mainly a little let down because I had read The Martian.
Yeah, you're one of those people that reads books, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, not that often, so let's not get too excited. But on occasion, I have been known to dabble in reading a book or two. On my little Apple electronic device. And The Martian was highly recommended, highly regarded. Everyone loved it. This is a fun old romp. It's not high art. It is not consistently enjoyable as a book. There are long stretches of math that I find impenetrable. But
do they write out all of the proofs and everything, like the actual math problem?
Basically, you know, in the movie, what they have as like the gasoline turning into water part.
Yeah,
that goes on for like a whole chapter. And it's like every little math detail about how you do that.
So it's part like research journalism, part fiction.
Yes,
it's fun,
except it's a little painful because I don't really. My eyes just kind of like glaze over because that's not really what I was looking for in the book. But you know, it has all the basic stuff in there that you see in the film. So I don't really think you missed out on anything. And nor do I think that I would recommend the book to you, knowing you as a person.
Well, it lacks space diplomacy. So that's a thumbs up in my category, I guess.
Yeah, but it didn't translate exactly as I was hoping to the screen. I was a little skeptical about Matt Damon being cast as Mark Watney. Not because I have some sort of horrible opposition to Matt Damon as a person, but just he just didn't fit with what I mentally had in my head from reading the book. And
who did you have in your head?
No, it wasn't. I don't have anybody specific. It was more or less just him. When I saw the, you know, just like him with a question mark, like raised voice, tilted, you know, that kind of thing.
Was it Matthew McConaughey in your head the whole time?
No, it was definitely not. But like, they're supposed to be like a really wisecracking, like punny, dirty. Like he's a very sarcastic person about the situation that he's in. Not
so Sam Rockwell,
potentially, but not enough of that came across in the film that you see. He's mainly just like, I don't know, like doing a little castaway sometimes where he's just like sad, which is not especially like what I wanted, because it's the book really is like a fun romp. Like I said, like it's not.
He's more upbeat in the book. Is that what you're saying? He's more optimistic about his chances.
Well, he's not optimistic about his chances. He's just like, yay, I'm doomed. Let's talk about how doomed I am. And so that's what makes the book fun. But in the movie, it's not like, yay, I'm doomed. It's like, oh, I'm doomed. Let me crack a joke. Okay, but I'm going to be serious now. I'm going to drop an F-bomb to NASA, but now I'm going to go back to being serious.
Is it kind of that that madness setting in of realizing how far away he is and that there's nothing to be done about it other than survive? Is it that kind of silliness?
And then he stares off into the distance as we have our POV camera shot of whatever Hab camera is looking at him whenever he's sad. I was a little disappointed. But
speaking of Avatar, yeah, there's a lot of monitor POV style footage of him, isn't there?
Well, in the book, he has a lot of it's basically told through his like journal entries mostly. And they decided wisely to not have Matt Damon sit there write things, because that would probably not make for great cinema. But the problem with that is that the way they chose to do it is there's just a lot of like dead air sometimes. Like, I don't know if you picked up on it, but he would just like just stare off into the distance. And it's like, there's no distance. You're inside of a room where the wall is like 6 feet from you. So I don't know. But
it's deep and full of emotion. He's thinking.
I just didn't.
He's pondering his existence.
I just didn't really super respond to it very well. And I don't. I'm absolutely baffled by the Golden Globe win for best comedy. That is preposterous. There is nothing about this movie that makes me go, yes, hilarious comedy. Like, it has.
There was that funny part where he got the poop out of the thing.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's also funny in the book because you're like cringing the whole way through it. You're like, no, you're not gonna. Nope. Oh God, he's like detailing all the facts about night soil, which, you know, they don't really go into in the film. He just, you know, opens up vacuum sealed poop and makes the soil in the hab, and makes funny faces. And so, you know, there's just more levity that happens there. And, you know, even though you cast somebody like Kristen Wiig, she like has a couple funny, like probably 20 seconds worth of comedy moments in this film. And that's it. Cause, you know, I mean, her character is not really like super like central to what's happening. And it's supposed to be mostly about Mark Watney, who is Matt Damon, who is kind of boring.
I like the way Jeff Daniels said Mark Watney.
Mm.
He says it kind of funny.
Well, Jeff Daniels had sort of I don't know, like a Zoloft affected manner of speaking or something. Like he was very flat most of the time.
Well, he was supposed to be serious. Everyone was supposed to be serious. These are serious matters.
Yes, but that serious all the time. And I didn't really care for Chiwetel. I'm going to mess up his name. Chiwetel Ejiofor? The Serenity guy.
That name that I'm looking at right now, and I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, I
he was in Serenity?
Yeah, he was the bad guy in Serenity. The one who would like do the nerve pinch to make everybody stand perfectly still, and then like monologue about how he was going to, you know, how disappointed he was and how smart he was and blah 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 blah, and then he'd have a sword and then he'd make them fall on the sword. It was dumb. It was so dumb.
I never saw it, but I never planned to see it either, so I don't really feel like you spoiled anything.
You should. I definitely didn't. You should definitely watch Serenity because
I don't want to do that.
Then you'll like flip your TV and then you can buy a new TV. And you'll have an excuse for some 4K up in your life.
No, I don't want that either.
it's just I can't. Basically the only person in there that you kind of like is sometimes questionably what's her face from House of Cards and Stargate Universe?
Kate Mara?
Yes. I like her.
I thought you were going for Jessica Chastain.
No, I don't. She's
you don't like her.
It's not like I dislike her as a person, but you know, two space movies in 2 years. Come on, Jessica. Come on, Matt. Like, pull it together. Like, you don't have to be in like every space movie. You guys can do something else.
Have you been listening to script notes lately?
No, I'm also behind, but might not be catching back up anytime soon.
Well, I missed whichever episode they actually talked about the Martian, but the recent one they mentioned it again. They used the phrase competency porn to describe this movie, just a movie full of smart people doing smart things, and it's entertaining to watch how they do their smart things. And I thought that was an interesting term in terms of trying to categorize this movie and what it actually is, because when you boil it down to sort of its plot elements, it's like, yeah, that could be basically any sort of space movie, but then you rely on some other sort of tension or character work to sort of make it interesting to watch for two whatever hours it is. And I think really the draw for this kind of movie is that it was just smart people doing smart things, and it's slightly outside the norm to see people who aren't just tripping and falling over themselves and just screwing themselves over at every single turn, and, you know, just dealing with all of the issues that were presented by nature or whatever that just sort of happened to them, and watching them MacGyver their way out of it. I mean, there was a reason MacGyver was so popular for all those years, but as a movie, I don't know that that theme really just excites me all that much. How about you?
I mean, that's kind of what the book is, like, smarts conquering things. I'm fine with that. That was the point.
Okay, but you're fine with that as the premise for a movie?
Yeah, it doesn't need a bad guy. Like, they're overcoming an obstacle. It's just, you know, it's space. They're overcoming space as an obstacle.
Interstellar was the same, kind of, except Earth was the bad guy, too.
No, except he was his own bad guy from the future through a black hole, because he sent himself to go die.
Kinda. I mean, he didn't die.
Man versus man in black hole. So
man versus younger self.
I know. I'll hit this bookshelf and I'll knock out latitude and longitude and binary to send myself to the military base.
There was no sand Morse code in this one, for sure.
No, fortunately. There are a few other disasters that happen in the book that get that turn to problems for Mark and the team to solve. Like, there's after he collects Pathfinder, he's working on the rover to get across over to the other MAV, and when he's doing that, he accidentally drills through the power supply for the Pathfinder and causes a short circuit and breaks it, and so they basically have to go back to like using rocks and stuff and things. And so he loses his contact again for sending messages and receiving any feedback from NASA. So they can see him and not be able to respond. But and that adds another layer of tension, because there's this huge storm that happens in the book as he's driving towards it, and he can't really tell. And because of the way Mars is, like, sand slowly starts to accumulate on the edges of the storm, and by the time you realize you're inside the storm, you're already drove into it. So that was a tense part of the book, and it's not in the film. He just, you know, makes it basically like a straight line right to the MAV and to take off. And they were trying to replace some of that with tension about trying to solve for how to get Mark back, you know, more stuff on at JPL, more stuff with scenes with the Chinese government, officials that work for their space agency, and you know, there's that stuff. Now, how did you feel about this in terms of, like, whether or not you found it to be compelling in terms of the story? How did you feel about this in terms of the competency of the execution of this? You know, here we have Ridley Scott. We have these acclaimed actors, and we have, what was it, Dean Egg and NPC worked on this, I want to say.
Yeah, it sounds right.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's like all competent people working on this stuff. How did you feel about the actual, like, execution of this? Like,
I thought the Martian environment stuff, I saw a fair amount of some of the breakdown for the sort of environment extension stuff, and I thought that looked really good, and it was nicely done. Nothing sticks out in terms of execution as good or bad in particular, except, you know, we talked offline briefly about some of the screen comp stuff back down on Earth. I don't remember anything specifically in his hab that was weird. You know, now that I'm thinking about it, it was fascinating to hear them talk about how much they enjoyed the footage they got out of their GoPros and decided to use more and more of it as the production was going along. And I could see what they were saying, because they've got those sort of, like, goofy cameras strapped on the side of their helmet for some reason. That's apparently part of their thing. But yeah, the GoPro footage did not look super great. I know they did a fair amount of work trying to clean that up and stuff, but I could have done without that. But you know, I was thoroughly impressed by the environment work, and that's pretty much the part that I paid the most attention to, I guess.
I like the environment work that they did, and everyone should check out the breakdowns for what they did for that. There's nothing.
Wasn't all of the masks CG, by the way, too? Sorry, just like all of the reflections and everything. Like, there was no mask on the helmet. That was all CG later, wasn't it?
Yeah, because they wanted to reflect the environment in it. Was my understanding.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, and so like, but you know, they did the same thing with gravity. It's interesting to see this, but and I also like the Hermes. I thought that was competently executed. Looked like, you know, a spaceship without looking too far future, I guess. Although, you know,
had a pretty sweet like lunchroom area.
Yeah, with NASA budgets the way they are, though, I don't think that's possible. I feel like some of that lounge lunch area with the arms and the spinning and stuff, I felt like some of that was a little bit of a 2001 homage kind of thing.
Probably.
You know, it's not a ring. It's like the little spinning arm things, but it's sort of the same vibe. And there's sort of like a communications dish right in like amidship. But I thought that was all like fine. But it was mainly the stuff at Times Square and Trafalgar Square, where they did the burn-ins on the monitors and they put the replacements for the Times Square monitors and stuff up in there. And it's just like, it was too saturated, too clear, too, you know, evenly illuminated, because it's supposed to be like a bunch of tiny little lights. It just didn't sit in right. And so that.
Well, maybe in 2035 or whenever this takes place, everyone's got 8K monitors everywhere and that's what they actually look like.
Yeah, great. But I didn't really think that was great. And there was the part where he's knocked out in the MAV after they've achieved orbit and they're going to go collect him. But he's passed out from the force of the launch. And there are all those little tiny metal bits and nuts and bolts and stuff that are floating in front of his face. That was not well done. Super well executed, in my opinion. So, you know, it is up for an Oscar for VFX on the short list for nominations and stuff.
Oh, you know, now that I think about it, this was shot native stereo, wasn't it?
I don't believe that was the case.
I think a portion of it was, at least.
Okay.
Yeah, it had to have been shot native stereo. Somebody else was talking about long before I even saw it, how they thought the camera movement and work was incredibly boring. And I think that had a lot to do with the fact that a lot of it was a giant stereo camera rig that couldn't really be moved around.
Was it one of the RE whatever, like ginormo rig things with the mirror things?
Yeah, big beam splitter. This was shot on Red Dragons.
Oh.
With Fujinon and Angino lenses.
Mm.
Yeah.
Kind
of prevents you from doing really like close camera work or a lot of rapid movement.
Well, but I think that they probably weren't going for that either, because they're supposed to. I think they wanted sort of that, you know, you're isolated and alone and sort of a removed from him. Like, you're not like all up in his biz. Like, there's a lot of intense action happening because there isn't. So it didn't bother me so much. I think the pacing of the film bothered me more than the camera work, because there are just long stretches of looking at nothing, but whatever.
2 hours, 24 minutes.
It feels long, doesn't it?
A little, yeah. I mean, but like you say, this is a slow movie about his isolation, and I suppose that's kind of necessary, or at least that's what would match it well.
Okay. And do you have anything else you want to contribute to this? You have any more dirt you want to talk about? And this is with this.
I was saying, do I have any more dirt to kick on the movie?
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, it was fine, and I'd watch it again when it's on TV or something. I just, you know, it was. There's all the fun jokes about how many times we've spent a bunch of money to go rescue Matt Damon from places, which I think is mildly humorous, but as a film, it's a beautiful looking space movie by Ridley Scott. And, the story is just, you know, the story is almost like the third act of another space movie. Like, you know, you got to go do the rescue bit once everyone is, killed the monster or whatever it is and found themselves stranded on a planet.
But I think you're having like a fundamental disconnect problem here. There's no monster.
I know. That's what I'm saying. This movie would be like the third act of another kind of space movie.
No, but it's hard to explain, but like there's no antagonist or anything. Like it is man versus nature. Like he's trying to conquer this environment that he's in.
I know, and you know, while I enjoy all of those like survivory shows, like
it doesn't really seem like it.
I like Survivor, man. That's a fun show I watch on TV. I do zone out from time to time, but like, yeah. What do you want me to say? Like, it's exactly what would happen given these circumstances and the smart people who have the solutions being allowed to do the things that they wanted to do. Like, that's fine. It's a movie.
Wow. Okay.
It doesn't do much for me. I don't know what to say.
I wish they had gone heavier and broader with Mark Watney having his comedic sense of humor that he had in the book. I wish they had done more in terms of the maybe one or two of the additional action set pieces that are inside of the book inside of here. Some further complications for things, but you know, it probably didn't need to replicate exactly everything that's in the film because that'd be a like 4-hour movie, but whatever. It felt long and not enough happened. And that it was just
how long was the book? Do you remember roughly like 300 pages?
Oh, it's a short read. I don't have an exact number on that.
I'm just trying to think of how much it would be just, you know, from the get go necessary to cut out just to make it screenplay length.
I couldn't tell you. Cause also a lot of it is him talking. So you wouldn't put most of that in there. And a lot of the stuff with action and other bits and stuff, it's like revisited inside of his journal. Like he's explaining it back to you as it happens. So it's not like it's like some third person omniscient narrator explaining the events. Anyway, I like
it. They did a fair amount of montage-y stuff too for some of his science-y bits too, like when he's making the potatoes and all that, don't they?
Yeah.
In the movie, I mean.
Yeah. But in another thing with the music, That's a point in the book. It's not
The disco and stuff, right?
Yeah, it's not an especially hilarious point in the book, but they decided they were really gonna like hit it hard in the film, but it doesn't ever seem to really like be funny. It's just like, oh, and then there's the music.
Well,
okay,
I hear
we did that. Check the box.
I hear fun space movies with a soundtrack from the 70s are more popular with audiences. It's a Guardians of the Galaxy joke.
Anyway, so let's go talk about another movie that had orange dirt and rocks that were added digitally in later, and vehicles.
more explosions, though.
Yeah, more explosions. I would say a lot more happens in this other movie we'll be discussing, and that is Mad Max Fury Road, the one with the people and the stuff.
See, and you kind of got a raw deal on this one because you saw it late. And while pretty much everyone who saw it had inflated expectations, because even if one person saw it before you, they were talking about how great it was and how it's amazing and all this stuff. And they hyped it way up, but you saw it way late. So basically everyone in your world had hyped it up. Is that correct?
Basically, I know that there were people who didn't like it, but it didn't sound like anybody had any objections to it that I would have necessarily been like, oh, well, that's a red flag or something like that. Like a lot of people were like harping on it for being like too messagey or something. And after seeing the movie, I'd be like, I don't know about that.
What were they saying the message was that it was harping
just
on?
Just like, you know, pro women stuff. You know all those wearing MRA people who are upset about it. And I was just like,
she's the main character and not him, and that's horrible or something, apparently.
Yeah. And I'm just like, you know, it really wasn't like as big of a deal as everyone is making it out to be. Like she's a woman and she did her stuff and she won in things, and it's not bad.
She was a rad character. She had a large role in it, and that was good for the story.
Yeah. So I don't understand the objection that people had to it necessarily on those levels. So yeah.
Well, people are stupid. So
Yeah, but at the same time, I also don't feel like it was a rah 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 women win movie like a lot of other people feel like it was. So it sort of like seems sort of neutral.
Are you talking about how in this futuristic world, this despotic leader has like a gaggle of women that he impregnates at his whim for his own children?
Well, also the ones that he's like milking and stuff, and that's pretty gross. It's definitely, I would say, more about equity in this film than it is about a pro or anti anything message. It's mainly like anti jerk face message. and it's not even like message. It's like, hey, I'm going to go blow some stuff up. Let's have that person be a guy and that person be a woman, and we'll just have them blow things up. Okay, great. See you back in 2 hours. So
yeah, I think the moral of the story is don't be a tyrannical douchebag.
Yeah, he's so cartoonishly over the top that it's not like it's like an allegory to people that you know in your daily life. I mean, other than Donald Trump, it doesn't really seem like this like is a person, or even close to a person, and it doesn't seem like the bad guys in here, besides him, or even close to being normal people either. So it's really just like sort of an action comic book kind of a thing that's put up on the big screen. And knowing that it was basically composed from storyboards, that does make a lot of sense.
Do you think being composed from storyboards and being a very visual movie, it kind of suffers a little bit of like the Sin City thing where it's gorgeous to look at, but it's not necessarily all there coherently?
No, well, I'll push back on that because I really despise Sin City. I don't despise Mad Max Fury Road at all. Quite the contrary. I think that it is interesting and engaging to watch. I just don't think it has much substance. Sin City had things about it that I really object to, in that it had what they thought would be pretty to look at, but I didn't like. And then they had basically just horrible Frank Miller dialogue and writing and poor plotting. And I'm sorry.
Oh, you weren't a fan of the inner monologue stuff, were you?
No. Sorry, everyone.
That would do it.
Everyone who loves Frank Miller stuff, great. That's fine. You do you. Whatever it is the kids say these days. But
No, that's what they say. It's a horrible phrase. Don't do that.
I was using it ironically. So then now I'm only a jerk because I used it ironically. The thing is that I just didn't care for it. It really bothered me, and I objected to the whole thing. I am very happy that with this movie, they didn't decide to have like a voiceover for everything that's happening, like an inner monologue for every character as they're doing things. There is a little tiny shred of a monologue at the beginning of this film, when there's like that little gecko thing with the double-headed gecko on the rock. And then after that, You're on your own. Like
That was basically the trailer too, wasn't it? That little clip there. And it's kind of funny how quickly it goes from that nice clip from the trailer where he's standing up on the hill next to his car to like, no, you're done. You're captured. Your car's gone by.
Yeah. It throws you right into it. So while story wise, like there's not like, this isn't a tremendously deep or amazing or original or monumental story. It isn't. It is visually very engaging, and it is fascinating to watch. And it is one of those things where your eyes are just like locked to it the whole entire time. Like I didn't find myself wanting to like pull out a phone or something and be like, "Hey, what's up on Twitter?" Because there's just so much.
Well, there's plenty of stuff to look at. You can look at all of the detail and all of the vehicles, which are fascinating. You can look at all of the gorgeous environment work that was done here and just the craziness of it. You can look at the insane color grading. You can look at the weird day for night thing that they did. There's a lot to look at when you get bored of looking at the story or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's very little dialogue in lots of parts of this just to, you know, to tide you over. So you just got to stare at stuff.
It is very spare. And what is there is, shall we say, utilitarian. It's not.
You mean how Tom Hardy speaks in grunts for the first like portion of it?
Yeah, I mean, and he has a piece of metal clamped over his face for like what, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, something like that. So it's and also Charlize Theron as Imperator for that one.
Furiosa, the word fury, but then Osa.
Yeah, with the Osa. So Danosa, this is the thing that happens here, is she's driving the truck, and she has like a line of dialogue where she's like, we're not going to guest out. We're going to do this other thing. And that's basically all the dialogue we get from her for like 30 minutes, too. It's mainly about like wondering what it is she's going to do. Because as the audience, we don't necessarily know exactly what her plans are, even though it is very clear as an audience member that her plans do not reflect the plans of Desert Darth Vader. Yeah. Yeah, that's her Twitter bio disclaimer. opinions do not represent those of my employer.
Travel plans do not represent those of my employer.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. But she, it is really just something that is stripped down and throws you right into it. And it is about action set piece to action set piece to action set piece. And there are fascinating ideas for how to conduct combat in this sort of made up world. Like, there is world building here. On a very large scale, but it is mostly done without saying anything. Like, there isn't exposition about the world building,
right? Mostly. And just like the way we're thrown in the beginning of Furiosa's plot to sort of escape and take these women away, throughout the course of, you know, that unfolding, we learn basically what her regular routine would have been, but we never saw any of that stuff. So while we're seeing things that are, you know, unique, and that's why this movie exists, because these are the interesting things happening to these characters, we get a lot about what happens on a daily basis and what their world is like without actually having to see the boring parts of what their world is like, which is nicely done and intermixed with the action sort of seamlessly. So you don't feel like you're being spoon fed a bunch of exposition, even though there's, you know, it's a pretty straightforward story. They drive one way and then they drive the other way.
Yeah. So what? Even the places have really just sort of like logical, straightforward names. There's Gastown and there's Bolt Farm, and you're taking the Aquacola over to, you know, trade and Mother's Milk. And guess what that is? It is what it says on the tin. And, you know, when they're driving to Gastown, there's no question about, oh, is that the town? Because, like, literally, that is the cartoon version of like, if you would just ask somebody on the street, just like, hey, doodle me a gas town. They'd be like, okay, here's some oil derricks and some fire and smoke. And they'd be sure. Like, great, that's exactly it.
Well, this is the dystopian future. They've dispensed with all of the pleasantries associated with naming things. And it's just, you know, you get down to brass tacks. What matters is making sure people understand exactly what you're talking about when you're referring to Gastown and Bulletville or whatever the hell they're called.
Bullet Farm. Which I have questions about how they raise those crops, but so they
probably bury them in the dirt and then put poop on them.
But then you dig them back up and you take the largest ones to eat, and then you take the other ones and you plant them again so that they'll turn into new crops.
Sure, yeah, you plant a 22 until it's a 357, and then you can harvest it. I think that's how it works.
Oh God,
I don't have my bullet horticulture book over here.
Yeah. So the weird thing about this is that I'm sorry, not the weird thing. The interesting thing about this is you can also very quickly determine whenever somebody comes on screen where those people might be from or what they might represent, because when the Bullet Farm people show up, they are covered in bullets. They have like shells and the clips that you'd use on semi-automatic stuff draped over their shoulders. Like they are the Bullet Farm guys. And when the Gastown people show up, it's just like, yes, that's very much exactly what I thought that was going to look like. Other than maybe the metal nose, that was a little weird. But like that's the sort of thing that you just sort of expect from this sort of thing. It's like these are your over the top, characters. They represent this thing. There is an economy here in that we don't have to like describe everything about them. We don't need to talk about their interests or the backstory and how different things relate. And when tension arises in the ranks later on, it's very clear like who is tense with, you know, the other parties, et cetera. Like even the things like the the guys in the rocks with the motorcycles and stuff like that, it's just like, that is also clear what is happening there, that she has made this arrangement and that there's tension because the arrangement might fall through from either party not doing what they're supposed to do and things go south. And so you can see all of this stuff and it unfolds in such a way that there is precious little dialogue in this film. There's more water in this film than there is dialogue. And so
it has desperation aplenty, and that's sort of what drives everyone's actions and the plot forward.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that. For this particular movie, I don't want to go sit through a bunch of movies that are exactly made in this sort of a mold, where people are like, yes. And then just things blow up and it'd be like, you know, it'd be kind of refreshing if I walked out of this movie theater thinking about something. But it's not that I'm not thinking about things from Mad Max, but I'm not thinking about anything. Well,
aside from all of the nonsense that people on the internet feed to you, was there anything you actually walked out of this movie thinking about?
Just like that was cool to look at. And I liked some of the stunts and explosions and things.
Yeah.
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 I mean, but that's what I mean, is like, there's no deep story to get to and then be like, yes, it was really about this thing all along.
Well, they survived, and then there was nobility in the fact that he helped. And then he just wanted to get on with his life, man. He didn't want nothing from anybody. He just wanted to get back to the Citadel and walk off somewhere.
Blah.
Yeah. I mean,
I actually think the ending is a little bit of a letdown. I know that he's supposed to be like the loner cowboy going off into the sunset, like disappearing back into that crowd to go and, you know, do his own thing, that he's not going to be part of this community.
All I need is my gun and my car and this remote control, and I don't need anything from anyone else.
But it does seem like these, like, what, 5-6 women have taken over this government pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, they were up there in the chambers of power while all of this stuff was going on, so they're familiar with the ins and the outs and the goings on of the Continental Congress of whatever Bullet Farm Town or something, or wherever, the Citadel. They live in the Citadel.
Yeah, up in the rock outcropping. And basically, the other son, I'm assuming the only remaining son, basically just didn't have to let them up. You know?
Oh, you mean the little guy with the binoculars up top there?
Yeah. You just could have been like, nah, like, screw him.
Well, but all of the other people went over there and they jumped on the handles to the, all the kids went over there and jumped on the handles for the thing, and it let him up.
Yeah. But anyway, that's kind of like, just like the ending. And it's not like it's like the worst ending to a film. Like, it does, it, you know, we set up this little arc. They went through. They got their mission accomplished.
They flee on their way to the green place, and then all hope is lost because the green place has been destroyed by just the horrible environment. So hope is lost, but they can go back to the place where they were fleeing and then become the new tyrannical rulers of the Citadel.
Yeah, that's kind of the open-ended question I'm sort of wondering about. It's like, exactly are you going to ration out that water? I'm assuming
that's what I got out of it. They went back and they're like, free water for everybody, and then 2 days later they're out of water. They're like, we're all gonna die.
Yeah, because you can't just like pour the water out of that big water fountain thing like nonstop, because then you just don't have any water anymore. But you also at the same time don't want to be the despot ruler that was there before, so who knows how that's going to shake out.
I mean, at a very minimum, they probably won't enjoy that whole pomp and circumstance of like people blowing baby powder against them and putting clear plastic armor on them.
That was funny. That was sort of his Vader getting his helmet put on scene, basically.
Sure, except there were teeth on his mask thing.
Mm-hmm. And a belt buckle. So what did you think of him as a bad guy?
He was interesting, I suppose. There wasn't a whole lot of depth to him beyond, I have power, I want to keep my power, I'm the old scary guy, and I've always had the power, so you should fear me and stuff. And it was clear that he's sort of, within this community, cultivated this mystique of his otherworldliness with, you know, their whole the religious thing with the spraying of the spray paint on the teeth and all of their phrasing and stuff built around this sort of vehicle based belief system. But
witness me.
Yeah, all of that fun stuff. He elevated himself to this deity like position, and he was there long enough for eventually somebody to get tired of it and call him on his crap and say, like, no, we're not going to do this anymore, which became his rapid downfall, because while people did things for him because he was the supreme leader or whatever, he didn't really have the chops to back it up, so he died.
Yeah.
And somebody else is going to take over, and they're probably going to start their own strange spiritualistic mystique about whatever they want people to do and believe in this sort of hopeless dystopian future. So, you know, they'll have something to cling on to, I'm sure. Some other sort of silly thing about worshiping the vehicle and what prosperity it can bring to you in this wasteland and all that fun junk. But hopefully a little bit more realistic now that it's run by Furiosa.
Potentially. We'll find out if she recovers from her wound or succumbs from the sepsis or something, because they killed the doctor.
Get some gangrene from that little knife that was in her gear shift.
That was not a little knife, Dan. She also had like fluid in both of her lungs. Like she was not a well person by the end of the film. She's like basically barely standing.
Yeah. Well, you know what to do if you ever have a collapsing lung. You just stab yourself again on the other side of your rib cage, and that totally fixes it.
I'm not a doctor, but I would have maybe not felt comfortable doing that. If you have a collapsing lung, maybe don't come near me, because I don't know if I could help you with that.
Are you squeamish with regards to blood and stuff like that?
Yes, but also I wouldn't want to get sued for stabbing you. Although I don't think that's a concern for Mad Max, but
Mad Max Fury lawsuit will be the next one.
No, but yeah, I mean, I look at this and it's pretty and it's neat and it's vibrant. Well, it's very orange and blue. It got some amazing editing, like from a technical standpoint. What has been accomplished is, well, it's a lot of cutting, and not just cutting, but also like dropping frames here and there. Like it's really interesting to, especially if you just watch that. The first part where he breaks out of the confinement area after they've tattooed him before they go to Brandon.
The over crank and jump cut stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's almost like a stop motion kind of a thing at that point. Like, because they've dropped so many frames, like speeding it up. It's really interesting to see something like that. Because it's not really a technique that you see used very often. And there are also a lot of really interesting shots from the rigs that they were using to film the vehicles, even though, you know, they were like filming many of these vehicles separately from one another and then putting them all in together later. They still like did these big, huge rolling camera move things and stuff. So it's like this, they did a lot of stuff here that's just fundamentally impressive, I would say, and different from what you see in other action films, which I think is mainly something you can't say about something like The Martian, where I don't feel like it was super different from other space movies that you've seen recently.
Yeah, all of the stunt work with the guys on the poles and stuff, I thought that was both fascinating in terms of what these characters would have come up with to pull people out of other vehicles and that sort of thing. But just, you know, the actual execution of it, too, was interesting to watch and sort of suspenseful and all that fun stuff. But yeah, the It is a beautiful looking movie. And I think, you know, it took them a long time to sort of just finally settle on the actual look of it and just how far they wanted to push that. I think they said they were basically, you know, in color correction alongside all of the visual effects for like a full 8 months, trying to just make sure it looked exactly the way that they wanted to look. And there's a lot of work in this. I mean, even if it wasn't for just extensions and stuff, it just the work in terms of building the look was a lot of work, and it was good looking stuff.
Yeah. I definitely think like that this deserves that praise that it has received. I do fundamentally disagree with some misinformed people who are like, it was all practical. It was just like wire removal. Cause that, well, that was not the case, but, it's very nice to see the other like craftspeople on this, aside from the digital effects artists showing off what they do. Like you watch some of those featurettes on the guys operating the polecats, where they have the counterweight on the bottom and they lean on it. They had to find the right material so they could have like a 6 meter plus, like whatever that is in real units. I don't know.
So it doesn't snap and they go flying into a prop vehicle.
Yeah. Like they put so much thought into this stuff that when that rig flips over at the very end, the war rig, when, Knock is in it driving, they had like a stunt guy inside of a plexiglass little cage thing. And then they have like a prop, like rubber body. Well, not rubber, but latex. They ejected out of there during the crash. And they shot all that with like a Phantom. I think it was like 300 frames per second or something like that. And they have the guy in there flip this huge vehicle. And it's not the kind of stunt that you see pulled off every day. Like, if this was a Michael Bay film, that would have probably all been digital. Not that that would have been bad, but he probably would have flown the camera through it. But it's just
well,
interesting.
We got the other way around. We got the steering wheel coming out to the camera. But yeah, there's...
You know, I think that was just like... I don't want to be too harsh, but the guitar, sure, that's a little far. The steering wheel and the guitar, like it's just like accessories. It's just like, you know, you take something off. Like you turn around and you take off the first thing you see. Tone it down.
Well, I think somebody asked them about that and they said it wasn't necessarily a stereo gag or something. They just actually wanted to do that for the, it's kind of like one of those wipes where a character walks into the lens and then out of the lens on the other side. I liked the steering wheel come flying out because it was the little spirit of the driver guy who had the steering wheel with him the whole time. But, it's, you know, a little silly.
Yeah. But
I mean, let alone they just, you know, guitar guy dangling from the wires by himself. That
made me laugh every time I saw him. not in a bad way, but just like in a, like, this is bonkers. Like, I can't believe that's in here. But you know, it's your war drums that are going as your troops go into battle. Like, you can't just have them like driving through a desert in complete silence. You got to have your, heavy metal guitar.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think probably all cassette players, 8-tracks, and CD players and all of these vehicles have probably broken, so you kind of got to just go old school and bring your own musician on top of a vehicle.
Yeah, and Bungie.
Yeah, Bungie, and then just, so, you know, so he doesn't fall off for safety. And then his guitar has to have fire coming out of it.
Yeah, that's how you can tell that he means business. Like
it's personal defense along with a little bit of flair. I mean, he's probably a Van Halen fan or something.
He didn't actually use it for any defense. Like he got attacked.
Well, I think it was because he was blind, right? Like he had a thing over his eyes the whole time, so like it was just if someone got too close to him they would get flamed.
See, that also like raises some safety questions. Like I don't know if that's up to like OSHA standards.
But you know, if he dies in this world, I don't think anybody really cares. They just put another blind guy in red pajamas up there and then he goes to playing the guitar.
Yeah. But it's really interesting. And I enjoy seeing all this complicated, intricate stunt work, and I enjoy that they can basically integrate it all together with the digital components to make it work as a film, which is not something you could say when the original Mad Max movies were being made. Back then, you'd have to do everything in the camera or you didn't do it. So, you know, you flip a car, you flip a truck or whatever, but they wouldn't have had this complicated shot where they would have flipped that truck and then put it into the canyon. Like you couldn't have flipped it in the canyon. That was not possible.
I mean, you could try and then everyone would die and then you would never make movies again.
Yeah. That's not a good way to make movies. So like you look at this thing, like they're just on a completely flat field. They flip the thing and there's like blue skies and clouds behind it as the smoke is rising and the dust. And so somebody had to go in there and cut all that stuff out and put the rocks and things. So it's neat. And then they also put in the element of the other truck hitting it from behind, from when the you know, speaker truck hits it. So that's all interesting because then you get to sort of have that realism of something in camera, but you get to supplement it with all this additional work on top of it to make it actually just not horribly dangerous and not and not a boring shot. So yeah,
there's some cool VFX breakdowns for this movie too. They've gone pretty in depth showing a lot of the before and afters. And yes, while they actually did build a lot of these cars, most of the time they were either not moving or moving slowly by themselves. And then all of that environment work is put back in and explosions and all of the other stuff combined. And it's there's a lot of really impressive work in this one.
Yep, I agree. So like if you were just even remotely comparing these two movies about barren wastelands, I'd be like, you know, they did all of the same landscape replacement-y stuff in this one. As they did in The Martian, and this
A lot more in this one. They actually shot a valley with some mountains for The Martian. They just extended mountains and turned it all orange. This one, like you said, it was a flat desert sort of plain, and then they put all of it in.
I don't think you picked up on my tone when I said that, but
clearly I didn't. They did exactly the same thing in both of these movies, Joe. They made them orange.
Yes, it's exactly the same. Dirt everywhere. These are two dirty movies, Dan. Two very dirty movies.
Yeah. They should have just combined them into one movie and just Mad Max's Martian.
Man, what would happen if you put Mad Max on Mars and he was just stuck in his little space capsule?
He would probably freak out. He's basically like a feral cat. So if you put him in like a spacesuit, he'd probably like try and claw his way through the helmet. And then like as soon as he broke it, you know, it would decompress and he would die.
You don't think he's good at planting potatoes?
I'm sure he could figure that part out, but then the going outside, I think he would just walk out there and explode.
Yeah.
He's more of an act first, think later kind of person, or act first, think never kind of person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but the actor playing him, Tom Hardy, is no stranger to space movies. So. Do you want to know what he was in?
You're going to say the Star Trek thing, aren't you?
Yes. He was in Star Trek Nemesis, the film that killed the franchise. It was supposed to be his big break, and it kind of made him not feel very well about himself and others around him, and he had some serious life problems after that. So I'm very happy that he was able to move on with his life after that.
Well, he was wearing
like
a weird leather jumpsuit and like face paint, wasn't he?
No, he had just like a little like fake little chin bit and like little nose piece to try to make him look more like Patrick Stewart, and then they like made him shave his head. It wasn't like super physically demanding, but it was he was not the problem with the film. But I might have been on another podcast this week that talked about bad Star Trek movies, and we might have talked about that and Star Trek Insurrection. So keep an eye out for that.
I'll pretend I know the difference between those two movies.
That's fine, Dan. You don't really need to, because I also know you're not going to listen.
I might. I listen to things you're on because, you know, you're there. And
But you won't understand the majesty of how terrible these films are.
That's never stopped me. I don't have to understand a podcast to listen to it.
Well, you should find out if it's on TV so you can turn it on in the middle or something. And then, like, get ripped on some bourbon or whatever and just watch the horribleness of it unfold. They're bad movies. I would say neither The Martian nor Mad Max Fury Road are bad movies. The Star Trek movies are bad movies.
Yeah, no, these are not bad movies. But you remember what happened the time I tried to watch that Wizard of Oz movie and I got really drunk. I blacked out halfway through and I didn't finish it.
Oh, Dan, that's not a healthy thing.
No, it was bad.
Yeah. So anyway, the thing is, Be careful what you watch. And if you wait to see something at home, that maybe it's not going to live up to your expectations.
Have you been able to put the other people's expectations and hype out of it and sort of just think about this in a vacuum for a little while? Or is that still sort of coloring your view of the whole thing?
It is still heavily coloring it, orange and blue. Mostly because the awards are going on now.
Need to revisit Fury Road in like a year or something.
No, it's just that I totally get Fury Road for every category that it's up for, except for maybe Best Picture. I don't know if I would bestow it.
It's up for Best Picture?
It is.
I mean, it's certainly like that sort of nice little hat tip to the artsy, well, artsy $100 million film or whatever, but like it's not your regular kind of Hollywood Best Picture.
No, it isn't. I find that refreshing. And like I said, like it is interesting, and I liked having seen it. I also happened to own it because I bought it when it was on sale, when it first went out on sale, because I was like, I need to watch this because it's really important. And then it just sat there in my iTunes for a really long time. I think it was maybe just overhyped for me. I wouldn't say spoiled. I know a lot of people get upset. They're like, oh, don't even tell me if it's a good movie or a bad movie. I don't want to know. It's a spoiler. And it's like, I don't feel personally that knowing whether or not.
Is Mad Max a spoilable movie?
No, I don't think so.
Is The Martian spoilable?
Not really. Cause I mean, you sit down to watch a movie like The Martian, you're like, okay, he's going to get off the planet eventually at some point. And, you know, maybe somebody else will die, but he's going to be fine.
And, I think at the part where he was doing, where he was getting off the planet and doing his Iron Man hand thingy mabob, I did get a little, like, you know, the sweaty palm, nervous heights thing, but it's like, he's not going to die.
No, I did not get that, but maybe I would have if I saw it in a theater like you did. And it was a little bit more, like, all-consuming. As it was a little underwhelming. On a 50 inch plasma. So, but Mad Max, I think, is just totally fine to watch. And I liked it. And it should probably win for several awards. Just maybe not Best Picture. And The Martian probably
should. Is it up for cinematography?
I don't remember. I know The Revenant is.
Oh, good. Natural light and stuff.
I don't know if you know about One Shot Stan. But
have you heard about this movie, The Rev?
I don't know if you heard, but it was hard for them to shoot it. Did you know there was some difficulty shooting that movie?
It took a really long time. They had to drive 2 hours in the snow uphill both ways to get to their locations. And then sometimes, you know, rehearsals and stuff. And I hear it was difficult working with horses and stuff. I watched one of those Hollywood Reporter like roundtables with a bunch of directors and stuff like yesterday. It was like an hour long thing with Tarantino, Ridley Scott, David O. Russell, Tom Hooper, Danny Boyle. Oh God, who else was there? There was a bunch of people there.
But really, just everyone you listed just sounds like this just sounds miserable.
Yeah, but Alejandro was there, and he was talking a little bit about it, and he was like, "Hey, it's apparently very difficult to work with horses, especially in these remote places, and we rehearsed a lot and blah 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 blah." It's like, yeah, that's how you make a movie. But cool, sure. Revenant, I'm sure it's a good movie, but after last week we talked so badly about it.
Yeah,
well, probably just, shouldn't bother again this time.
I'm not gonna harp on it too much. It's just that it's very hard for me to move past the constant and persistent marketing please give me an award campaign that they have. This movie was so hard for us to make.
Oh, apparently Fury Road's up for 10 Oscars.
Yeah, it's, and you don't see George Miller out there making the rounds talking about how hard it was to shoot in the desert and how hot it was.
Like, actually, in any of the behind the scenes stuff, you see him. He actually looks pretty like laid back and chill when they're shooting.
Well, he had an air conditioned like
of course he
area
did.
That he was hanging out in, but yeah. But you know he's not being an Alejandro about this at all.
Alejandro, did you just coin a new phrase?
Yeah, it's when you're a total freaking attention person about something. So yeah.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he's a very nice man in person.
George Maybe. Miller?
Well, both of them, him and Alejandro.
I don't know about that second thing, but
we don't have any evidence to the contrary yet.
Yeah, you're right. We don't, but you know, sometimes.
I take that back. We do have evidence the contrary. His Oscar acceptance speech.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like you get a certain vibe from somebody like him when he doesn't want to talk about how anyone did anything other than the hard work he put into it. And you're just like, oh, you just want everyone to say that you did a really great job. So
yeah. Well, Mad Max is up for Best Picture, directing, cinematography, editing, production design, costume design, makeup, sound mixing, sound editing, and visual effects. I give it cinematography. I'll give it. I might give it editing because I don't know what else is nominated. Production design, I would say it's pretty close. Again,
close to what?
Close to being one of the best things I saw for the year in terms of production design. Costume design, I don't know. You take some tire treads and tape them to people.
Well, let me put it this way. I would not object to it winning any of those categories.
Yeah.
The best picture one is just sort of the one I'm iffy on, because it was like, for it to be the best picture, does it need to have a narrative component to it that is meatier than, let's say, this movie is?
Well, if you want the cynical answer, to win Best Picture, it has to be a movie that makes Hollywood feel good about itself. So.
Well, it has to be an earnest film about the struggle of some white person somewhere.
This is the struggle of the artist, and how art is really just sort of a noble career that following is very important.
So, like, if you have to teach a king how to speak in front of people, that maybe you could get an award for that.
You know, and in that interview, Tom Hooper seemed like a very nice man, but I still don't like that movie.
I like that movie. I think your dislike of it is mainly colored by the fact that it beat The Social Network.
Well, so my dislike of it has a lot to do with the directing, because I think a lot of the camera lens directing choices were just very peculiar and cutesy and just not necessarily in service of the story, and I didn't enjoy that. So
there's a lot of weird, like, wide angle stuff.
There's a lot of really weird low wide angle right up in people's faces stuff, and it's kind of awkward and undignified, and I didn't really enjoy it, especially for a movie about, ostensibly about a king. So but yes, I am also bitter that it beat The Social Network, because it is not better than The Social Network. Anyway,
well,
I watched The Social Network again recently.
Dan, you don't need a forensic team for this. If it was good enough to beat The Social Network, it would have beaten The Social Network.
You bite your tongue, sir. Don't use my quotes against me.
Your quotes.
It's mine. I've taken ownership of that movie, since apparently nobody else feels like defending it. I will make it...
yes, no one. You're all by yourself out there. No one speaks highly of it at all.
Yeah. I made Rye watch it, too. He basically responded with, That was his reaction to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good movie.
I also like The Social Network. It's not my favorite movie ever. But
I've seen it more times than Mad Max and The Martian. That's for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. But,
you know, if I told you David Fincher directed The Martian, would you be disappointed in The Martian, or would you be like, this is an okay David Fincher movie?
I would have been waiting for someone or something to pop up and murder Matt Damon.
Not everything's about murder. Maybe someday he'll do his, you know, reboot of Milo and Otis, and then you can...
Oh, God. Milo and Otis is one of those great movies that you watch, and then you hear about how it was made, and you're like, oh, my God, no. They were so mean to those poor animals. So mean. I think that movie inspired, like, half of the animal cruelty, like, motion picture laws that we have now.
Yeah, like Air Bud, you gotta treat him really well. And all of his kids for his sequels and all of that. How many Air Buds do you think there have been? Because I know that's probably not the same Air Bud.
I'm going to go like 8. Oh, you mean like actual movies or dogs?
I mean dogs. It's not dogs. Like a dog per movie. It's got to be more than that. But it can't just be like one dog the whole time.
You probably take 2 per movie. Just, you know, you have backup. It's a, you know, 2 is 1 and 1 is none or something.
Yeah.
And so
3 is Bud.
Right. 3 is Bud. 2 Air Buds per movie. And then what? There's like 6 movies. So I don't know, maybe 12.
That's a lot of dogs.
Actually, no, it'd probably be more like a 1.5 ratio, because you probably reuse at least one of the dogs for the next movie. So I'm going to go, I'm going to go 9.
Sure. So anyway, that wraps it up. Is it wrapped?
I want to see like a Mad Max movie that has Milo and Otis in it.
Yeah. Oh, and do you know what I will say, though? I am not sure I would give any particular award to The Martian. So,
that. Yeah, because it's nominated. It won. What did it win for comedy?
Golden Globe.
Golden Globe. Won a
Best
Golden Globe for comedy.
Comedy of 2015.
What else? What was it up against that it should not have beaten?
It was up against, let's see, what was it? Spy and I got to pull up the list of nominees, but like I would have even picked a movie from 2014 as a comedy over that. Like it seems so weird to me. Like, do you, like, were you like laughing a lot in The Martian? I wasn't.
No, like I said, I think I laughed when he did the poop thing. But wasn't it hilarious when he like stapled himself back together in that super gruesome close up?
No, that was not hilarious.
Not at all. No.
No, it's really gruesome. Like Jason turned away and he was just like, "Tell me when it's over." And I was just like, "Oh, it's over." And then he looked back and then he like starts restapling it as it like had started spewing blood again. And I was like, "Nope, you got to turn away again." He's not as comfortable looking at blood even on screen.
No, that made me a little uncomfortable, but I think the only one that I've ever turned away from, or at least because they gave you warning which corner of the screen it would be, and so I put a hand up to cover that portion of the screen, was 127 hours. Mm. Did you ever see that one?
No.
It's there's that part at the end that, you know, is coming, and it's brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Brutal.
Okay, so best motion picture, comedy, or musical for... Oh, this is the wrong year. Thank you, freaking DuckDuckGo, for the wrong year.
That'll teach you to use DuckDuckGo. Let's see what The Martian is nominated for. Where's the awards thing? There it is. All right. It is nominated for Best Picture, Leading Actor, Screenplay based on material previously produced or published, Production Design, Sound Mixing, Sound Editing, Visual Effects.
For Oscar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the other
one. Golden Globe for comedy or musical, one for best actor, and was nominated for best director.
Matt Damon won for best performance by an actor in a motion picture, comedy, or musical for The Martian over Christian Bale in The Big Short, Steve Carell in The Big Short, Al Pacino and Danny Collins, and Mark Ruffalo in Infinitely Polar Bear. So maybe there weren't a lot of comedies last year.
What was that movie you just said?
Infinitely Polar Bear. I've never heard of it.
Never heard of it either. The Big Short actually looked like it could potentially be humorous, but again, in that sort of like not a comedy funny way.
Yeah, a very wry kind of a, like wry, W-R-Y, kind of a way.
The kid in the chat?
No, not that one.
The guy with the hat and the stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Oh, The Revenant won best picture drama, Golden Globe, huh?
Yeah. Good for them.
Mm-hmm.
And Leo won a Golden Globe.
Right, for the acting and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want him to win something at some point, but I don't know if I want him to win like this. It just seems improper.
Yeah. Okay, so best motion picture, comedy, or musical, The Martian, The Big Short, Joy, Spy, and Trainwreck.
Oh, boy. Those are... I mean, Trainwreck and Spy are comedies.
They are.
I don't think those other movies are comedies.
No. So maybe we just didn't make any comedies last year and nobody said anything.
Well, we made silly comedies.
I guess.
It's not
everyone speaks highly of Spy, although I haven't seen it. I've seen Trainwreck. It was funny, but I wouldn't put it in the best anything category.
Oh, God. Best performance for an actor, motion picture, comedy, or musical for the previous year was Michael Keaton.
Birdman.
Yeah, that movie was funny, wasn't it?
Hilarious. I don't think I've ever been so angry in a comedy, but whatever.
Grand Budapest Hotel won for best motion picture comedy, and I would agree with that. That one was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, Pride was nominated. I did not notice that. Into the Woods, St. Vincent, Birdman. Wow, really, really no like straight comedies, but I guess Grand Budapest was the funniest of those, huh?
Supposedly.
Mm. Anyway, award ceremonies. Do you have thoughts on the visual effects Oscar?
I mean, I think the category is full of very strong movies this year. Like a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff, all the great stuff. I wouldn't really object to anyone winning, other than maybe The Martian, not because I think it's bad. I just don't think it's the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
did you see Ex Machina?
I did not see it, although I've seen the VFX breakdown, so I guess it's kind of cheating.
Yeah, same, I guess.
Yeah. Everyone says good things about that as well, and it has a Oscar Isaac. Not plural.
We haven't seen it. There might be more than one of him in there.
Yeah, there's a robot Oscar Isaac. Mm-hmm. He was there to pleasure people. Well, that'd be an interesting movie. But different, definitely different. I think everyone did like really good, interesting stuff, and I'm very blown away by all of the VFX breakdowns that are basically being released nonstop for The Force Awakens. It seems like every day there's some new little thing where you can spin around and see part of a desert explode. And
did
then
you see that interview on FX Guide where they talk about all this stuff?
Did
you see they use deep compositing?
I did.
And you made so many jokes about deep compositing and how it's a joke now. They actually use it over there.
Yeah, well, for stuff like what they did, I probably would consider using it as well, because like they did a lot of Atmo and volumetric stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe you should do more atmospheric and explosionist stuff.
I would love to once I'm done fixing all of these retimes.
Once you're done like fixing people's elbows and whatever it is you're doing.
Let's just say not all work is glamorous work, but the glamorous stuff that is coming out this year, I think, looks really, really great. I think there are a lot of strong contenders for this award.
And you want some? You want some glamorous work? I'll hook you up with the VFX I got to do on this commercial here. It was a joke. There was a tone thing like you did earlier.
Oh yeah, I was just looking through my calendar.
look at that! I booked solid.
Uh huh.
Jerk. So do you have a vote for best visual effects?
No, I'm not going to pick a winner. I will just say that I like basically everything that I've seen from these films, even though, like we've said, I haven't seen The Revenant yet, and I haven't seen Ex Machina yet, but we're going to hopefully watch them before the awards show so that we can more accurately weigh on it when The Revenant walks away with the award and we all just scream. But
I'm going Star Wars for visual effects.
I here's the thing. I really like it. I think it definitely would deserve something along those lines. I can see reasons why the Academy of Total Dunces might not pick it. So, you know, like in previous years, sometimes they steer away from the overt, let's just say flashy stuff. Sometimes they pick it, like, you know, Transformers. And then sometimes they're like, you know what? We don't want any of these superhero movies to win. So we'll pick, you know, Interstellar. Not that Interstellar is bad, but let's just say the scope of the work is different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it'll just be interesting to see how it shakes out. Cause I that's a movie that also has a desert. That's, you know, they assemble things, put things all over the place. There's stuff exploding. There's digital creatures that, varying quality. It's got everything. It's got everything. Everything for everybody. It's a smorgasbord.
If they would have put a bear in that forest, it would have been game over for Star Wars.
Yeah. Just a laser bear.
Remember the part where the laser bear fought Kylo Ren in the forest? That was great.
That would have been awesome. They call it the Star Bear Killer. And it just sucks up a whole sun. And then
remember when he hopped up on his back legs and shot lightning out of his claws and then out of his eyes?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, that would have been neat. Like, yeah. That bear force choked somebody and then they actually choked him.
Yeah, I don't think a bear would need to force choke somebody. It would just, you know, run up and claw their head off.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. I'm kind of curious now. I will admit that I kind of want to see The Revenant.
You just want to walk out of there with a smug sense of satisfaction. No, when it's not a very good movie.
See, here's
don't
the
you?
Thing. I want to temper it. Like, I don't want to hate it necessarily just because I'm not currently enjoying the kind of vibe that I get from the director of the project. But at the same time, I'm not sure I'm going to wind up liking it because I've seen Birdman and I really hated that. So it doesn't seem like that's possible for me to enjoy this if it seems like this is also kind of going to go through that same sort of directorial brain and come out the other
side. I can't do that line of thinking because I really liked Birdman, but watching the trailer and all of the stuff for this one, I can't get into this. And I view them as two very separate properties if they are both a victim of the same director screwing around.
I don't think they're the same. I don't think they're the same feature. Like, I don't think he made, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio is not going to start talking to the camera, and a version of Leo will, you know, float down from above in a bear costume.
Yeah, there'll be a version like floating behind him in a bear suit with the head on top, where he's looking through the eyes, sort of talking to himself.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. But I don't think it's the same that way. I just think that he makes certain, shall I say, like pretentious or pompous choices in things that bother me. Like when he tries to be too clever, that it kicks me out of the film. So that's the kind of thing that I think I might see in this
movie.
Film
is all about the determination and the will to survive in these horrible conditions when everything is against you or something.
I saw that clip that I showed you, the one where he is in that river thing and Alejandro was talking about how hard it was and how they just seamlessly went to Montana to film in a different river because it was easier. there's the one shot where he's just like going into all the technical detail about it. And I'm sitting there watching it. And I'm just like, wow, this is just like totally blowing it out your ass for this like technical sophistication of how bananas this is and how you're really in the headspace of this. And it's just like, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to feel that way when I see it in theaters, if I'm not feeling that way from this clip, but maybe that's just because you're talking over it and I don't like you, but we'll see how it goes.
It seems fascinating that he felt the need to narrate the complexities of that particular shot, where if you were to just watch it for what it was, it's just kind of a long take, kind of wide angle, close personal shot with Leo as he escaped some people. And then it's like, all right, that's what that was, but apparently it was very complicated. So on the one hand, he wants to talk about how complicated and difficult it was to shoot, but on the other hand, he doesn't want to talk about how complicated and difficult it was to make and post. So yeah, that's that thing.
So it's just, you know, I don't know. He just rose me the wrong way. I'll try my best to keep an open mind.
He's got that cool hair though.
I don't know about that. Mm. Not really digging it.
Yeah. All right, I suppose we've beaten this bear to death. Any final thoughts on Red Dirt and expectations? Boy, don't expectations color our opinions of movies.
No, it's fine. I think, you know, Mad Max, I think, will go down as one of the really interesting action movies for people to see. And I think that it should be seen and remembered. I'm not sure that The Martian will be looked upon fondly in 10 years. As anything noteworthy. So that's about it.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like there are other movies that have gone by in recent years that are kind of like Mad Max, where it's just like, wow, that was a really weird outside the box movie. And it was entertaining, but like didn't really have the staying power. And I guess maybe in 10 years you can revisit it to see how well it works. But like there have been movies like that throughout the years, just here and there. But you know, it's more of a, you come back for personal reasons rather than just it being a great movie.
Yeah, but like I can see people like actually breaking this down, like trying to study what is interesting in the way that shots are composed and the way that
that worked out great for Fight Club too. Let's break it down into all of its little components.
No, and what I mean, fortunately, nobody's going to walk around in an outfit from the movie.
You don't think people are going to be Mad Max for Halloween?
Well, for Halloween, but you don't remember like after Fight Club came out, people were walking around trying to dress like Tyler Durden. Because they thought that they were themselves, like,
yeah, no,
super awesome.
I remember that. There were people. It was witnessable.
Yeah, my RA freshman year in college, he had a red leather jacket thing and the sunglasses that he had put on at night and all that stuff. And so he would wear that to try and press chicks. So he was doing real well for himself.
Yeah, it worked out real well. I bet he was missing the key component of being Brad Pitt in a movie.
Yes, because he was also like really scrawny and like dorky and not cool, and you didn't really want to talk to him. also, you know, none of those things really like made the Tyler Durden-ness of it really like gel together.
He needs tell him he needs to get a chipped front tooth and then a yellow sort of rubber scrubbing glove to wear on one arm, and that'll be his outfit.
Yeah. Hey, I got some lye for you here. It'll really complete everything.
Put this on. Put some lye on that head.
Yeah, it'll complete the ensemble.
It smells terrible.
I have never smelled lye.
Well, that's what he
and
says.
That's no lie.
Oh, Jesus. Mm-hmm. That's we're done.